is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Welcome back, folks, here to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub, and the crew, the MGO Blog Roundtable crew, is with us. So much to dissect and talk about with Brian Cook from MGO Blog. BC, good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
And we have Mr. Seth Fisher with his shoelace shirt on, which we'll have to get to before the end of today's show. How you doing this morning, Seth?
We've lost power everywhere across Metro Detroit, so I'm in my brother's closet right now.
I wondered where that was.
All right, and we have one Mr. Craig Ross, who I shall go to first, because I called Adrian Dantley one of the best scorers of all time, a lethal scorer, which that stands up. But he said, wait a minute, you're talking about who could have defended Adrian Dantley. We got a message in about a Michigan player, a Flint native, who defended Adrian Dantley maybe better than any person in history. So take it away, Mr.
Well, yeah, Michigan had and one of my favorite Michigan teams, Michigan had a forward. I don't know if you'd call him a power forward. He was 6'2", Wayman Britt. And Wayman Britt was the best defender who ever played at Michigan. And I think anyone who saw him would say the same thing. And one year in the NCAA championships, Michigan beat Notre Dame and Britt checked Dantley and held him to 2 points. And I think it was zero for most of the game. I think Dantley might have had a basket late and maybe it wasn't even against him. And I think Michigan beat Notre Dame a subsequent year with Dantley, with Britt checking him, and he completely erased Dantley in that game too. I mean, Wayman Britt was not a great scorer. At 6'2", he was a pretty remarkable rebounder, but he was a defender like you never saw. And he was just tenacious, as was that whole team. I mean, you had a 6'6", 6'7", center in Phil Hubbard before he blew his knee out, who was as fast and quick and just gave other centers fits because of that. And he had a long NBA career even after Hub blew his knee out. And the backcourt was remarkable with Ricky Green and Steve Grody, who were, we were saying off air, more than once, had several opportunities to try and check Grody over at Burns Park, and it didn't go well for me.
I was about to say, oh, you gave Grody work. In my defense, I wasn't alive in 1974. That's number one.
That's a personality defect.
Number two, the Adrian Dantley of the mid-80s was a much better scorer, I assume, than the Adrian Dantley of the mid-70s.
That's certainly true.
And so, but take nothing away. Look, Flint Town guy, I'm sure my wife would love a Flint Northern guy. Hey, look, it's one of those things where I'm not surprised that if there was an individual on this earth that had the chutzpah. Did I say that right, Seth? Did I say that right?
You have to say chutzpah.
I'm trying to get it. I can't ever get that part. So if there was a guy, he would be from Flint. That would be able to hold Adrian Dantley down to 2 points. But let's get to current Michigan business. So, Mr. Cook. Not a surprising turn of events, but still amazingly relevant that Hunter Dickinson is back at the University of Michigan. Devontae Jones coming to the University of Michigan. So in light of that, the other departures, the other returnees and departures, not just across the Big Ten landscape, but also across the national landscape, how do you see Michigan? Where do you see Michigan's position in the Big Ten? And where do you see Michigan's position national?
Well, if the public perception is that Purdue is actually the favorite in the Big Ten, then that makes me think that Michigan should win it again. Because we saw what happened when Trevion Williams went up against Hunter Dickinson last year, right? He shot like 40% from the field on huge volume. And, you know, how much different is Williams going to be this year? Probably not very, very much different. So they're already starting from a position of strength against one of the good teams. And then OSU loses to Dwayne Washington, who had some games against Michigan. So that's very good for them. And then if you start looking nationally, all right, you got Gonzaga, right? they got Chet. They got a lot of guys.
Yeah.
They're extremely annoying now. And then, like, people are talking up UCLA as a top five team, and we saw them, and we
Juzang's saw back. Juzang's
and,
back.
And Juzang's back. But you know, personally, I'm not really feeling that. That was a tourney run that they kind of scraped by in a lot of games, and they were so dependent on those mid range jumpers that it kind of feels like they're going to be another team that will make the tournament. They'll do decently, but I'm not looking at them as a potential one seed like a lot of people are. So, you know, competition in the SEC is like maybe Alabama, Kentucky could be back, you know, and then I don't think UNC is going to be great this year. and then Duke is unpredictable because of the same reason that Kentucky is unpredictable. So if you're looking at like teams and you want to bet on a team that's going to be a one seed, I think Michigan looks like a pretty good bet.
Seth?
Yeah, the other teams I was scared about in the Big Ten, you know, Dwayne Washington scared me, and he's gone. You know, they got Liddell back, but that's, you know, that's survivable, especially without Washington just owning Eli Brooks. And then the reason they like Purdue is they're taking Jaden Ivey and expecting him to like take that next step. But I mean, if he's not making his threes and he's got kind of a little bit of a wonky shot, like his value goes down. He's not really a true point guard. He's more just kind of like a guard. And then Maryland, you know, I was like, okay, they got themselves a point guard and a center, and because they were all wings last year, right? But now they're losing their wings. So, I mean, are they going to be really scary? So, like, and then, you know, Michigan State, you know, they're probably going to be better than last year, but, you know, they still got a ways to go. So I agree with Brian that Michigan kind of looks like the team to beat in the Big Ten, and you win the Big Ten again. It's a one seed.
Yeah, I've been watching, however, the FIBA under 19 games, particularly the Canadian team, because Caleb Houston's on that team. And also on that team is the big guy, EDF, and he's improving. I mean, he's been a force in these games, so I don't want to discount. I don't think he can play with Williams. I don't think the two of them can be on the court at the same time, probably. But but Edie is coming along, and he's a really good player. But I agree with Seth. I don't see their backcourt as really being dynamic enough in terms of getting them into an offense and passing the ball. But on the other hand, they do have as good a coaching as anybody around. I mean, I think Purdue is always well coached. I think Painter knows what he's doing. And so it's reasonable to consider them right at the top. In terms of Caleb Houston, he's not what I thought at all. I don't know if any of you guys have seen any of those games.
What did you think he was?
Right.
I thought he was a shooter.
He is a shooter.
Not in these games he hasn't been. What he is everything else. And he is a really – he is a very, very solid ball handler who's going to be phenomenal in the pick-and-roll game and who can pass the ball very well, especially off the dribble, very unselfish, probably going to be a good defender. He's averaging about three steals a game, and I think he's got nine steals in the three games I've seen. He doesn't need to be a great rebounder because of ED. They also have Charles Bediako on that team, but his shooting, he has beautiful form. He's going to be an 80% plus free throw shooter. His form from the perimeter is good, but he was 1 of 10 from three in one game. I think he was in the first game wasn't much better than that.
Okay, but we have like seasons worth of data.
Right, yeah. I know, but he's playing it. But he's not playing against high school kids now.
When he's playing at Montverde, he's not really playing against high school kids either, right? Like,
all I'm telling you is he's not shooting the ball in this tournament, and that's a fact. Okay. And now, is he? I mean, does his stroke, shooting motion look like it'll translate to a higher percentage, 40% maybe in the NCAA? I think yes. But in these games where he is being checked by a higher level player than he's probably ordinarily used to, I mean, the guy at Lithuania was good. You know, he's struggling shooting the three. But that's it. The rest of his game is, I mean, I love the rest of this game.
So a couple of things. I talked to, I mean, we, like Brian said, we have seasons of sample space to go on. The things that you're talking about that are impressing you about his game are the aspects of his game that people have talked about. Hey, man, you know, when that moves up a notch, that's going to be in it. So I'm encouraged by what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. But in talking to Dwayne Washington, not Ohio State's Dwayne Washington, but his, you know, his AAU guy, the guy with UPlay Canada, about him, said, you know, he is, what he likes about Caleb as a defender is his commitment on the end of the floor. So what you see with a lot of guys that are shooters, that are offensive guys like Caleb, is that, you know, the defense is something that you have to convince them to do. With Caleb, he already has that commitment. The next step for him is improving his athleticism, which I think you're going to see with John Sanderson, right? And so that, I think, also translates on the offensive end as far as his explosiveness at the rim, his explosiveness off the bounce. I'm encouraged by what you said about him being a guy that can find people. But if I'm going to point to the trait that I think is going to be most visible for Michigan at the earliest point of his Michigan career, I think it'll be his shooting. Now, if he does those other things that you're saying, that there's no question he's a one and done guy. If he's creating off the bounce, you know, getting to the rim, finding people, if he's doing that, he's a one and done player. I'm not convinced yet that he's a definite one and done. That's just me. But if he does those things, he will be.
That Canada doesn't run a lot of pick and roll, but when they have, it's been with him as the ball handler.
Craig, if he has more than 10 pick and roll possessions this year, I will buy you a beer.
Well, they've had some in the FIBA games, and he's been really, really good at it.
But I mean, you're looking at a roster here that's got, you know, fifth year senior in Eli Brooks who's run pick and roll. You've got Frankie coming in. You have Devontae Jones who ran a ton of pick and roll at Coastal Carolina. Yeah. And he's a questionable 3-point shooter, but he's got that floater. So if Michigan is looking at putting their guys in the best position to succeed, they're going to run a lot of pick and roll with their point guard, and then they're going to kick it out to Caleb Houston. So I don't see it, especially in year one as a college player. I think that he's going to have a very freshman Zach Irvin kind of role with maybe some more upside when he attacks a closeout. But I struggle to see a 6'8" guy with his kind of athleticism actually running a lot of PNR.
We'll see. I mean, but if you ask me what the strength of this game would be him as a ball handler in PNR.
Yeah.
That's what I see in him. Maybe I'll be wrong. And I hope that the three games he's had there, well, the first two, this last game was a blowout. He only played 20 minutes and he didn't shoot the ball a lot. I mean, but the first two games, but I mean, I'm encouraged by his unselfishness. I'm encouraged by his defense. And he is 6'8". I mean, I think he's a legit 6'8". So, I mean, and sometimes the Canada's had him playing at the two and he seems comfortable.
What question for you guys, about Michigan and the Big Ten and how that plays into their, you know, their national upside as a championship contender. One of the things that people said about last season was the Big Ten was such a gauntlet. That, you know, once you get to the postseason, the scout is so out on you. The book is so out on you. You've been beaten up over the course of the Big Ten. Now, obviously, a big factor for Michigan is there's no livers, right? So it's really hard to gauge. But I ask that question based on the fact that this year's Big Ten, when you consider, like Seth said, no Morsell, no Wiggins at Maryland, right? Maybe no one is talking about Illinois being a contender this year, but maybe no Kofi Coburn.
No, I think Coburn is gone. He said he's not coming back to Illinois. So
he's transferring if he doesn't go NBA, he said.
Yeah.
So he said he's definitely out. I thought he left.
That's what the last news from Coburn was, that if he's not in the NBA draft, he's transferring someplace else.
He has withdrawn and he's put his name in the portal.
Okay.
And as of a day ago, he says he wants to make a quick decision about staying at Illinois or transferring.
Okay.
So maybe he
will stay.
Yeah, so but a lot of Kentucky smoke there with the assistance over there from Kentucky. But still, if he's not at Illinois, that makes that an easier game. No Dwayne Washington at Ohio State is absolutely huge because you guys, I mean, he had this special thing. I don't know what it was because Michigan did recruit Dwayne, but there was some, when he played Michigan, it's like he put on the cape and it was another level. That becomes easier. So you could see a scenario where the path in the Big Ten is easier to a point where maybe you feel more freer to give this elite freshman class some more burn, some more tick, to develop them more, to have them more game ready when you get to the postseason, that maybe this Michigan team, while challenged in the Big Ten, isn't taxed in the Big Ten in the way that they were last season, and maybe that gives them an even higher ceiling this year. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, sorry. There's a couple of teams that you didn't mention that are probably set to have huge drop-offs, and that's Iowa and Wisconsin.
Them two, you're right, exactly.
So, like, yeah, I think this version of the Big Ten is going to be much, much weaker than it has been in recent years. So you have that article that came out after someone leaked that conversation with Greg Gard. I don't think Greg Gard is long for Wisconsin.
Let's pause there, because I actually disagree, because I think that's maybe one of the most Bush League things I've ever seen happen. And the word is that it wasn't one of the players. Maybe if it was one of the players that had leaked it, I would agree with you. But the word,
I'm just talking about the actual conversation that was being had.
Yeah, but the players, like, so the Wisconsin State.
What was it, Sam? Because I haven't heard this. So some of the listeners haven't heard this.
You remember we were talking. So I'll give you a perfect example of a conversation we had here on the round table.
Okay.
Remember me saying, man, it doesn't look like Greg Gard and Micah Potter are really on the same page. He's like, they're going back and forth. He's giving Potter business. So they lose to Iowa at home, I think. And there was a players only meeting, not players. Mm-hmm. There was not a seniors only meeting with the staff. And so those seniors met with Greg Gard and his assistants basically to say, you're full of crap. You know, this, you're making it about you when last season it was about us. And that's when we were winning. But you throw us under the bus in the media. You don't have our backs. You know, we just feel like, why did some of us come back here? Why are some of us here? The reason why we're losing is you, right? So that was the premise of that discussion. Someone leaked that to the media. It was printed a couple of weeks ago as an expose, and they went to talk to one of the seniors, a nameless senior in the meeting, who said, yeah, by the end of that meeting, Greg Gard is crying, saying, it's all my fault. I apologize. I'm going to be better. The word is that one of the assistants, so the guy who wasn't retained, what was the guy's name that wasn't retained?
I think it was Alondo Tucker.
Right. So the word is that it was him that leaked it because Greg Gard didn't retain him. The seniors seem to be saying that, hey, you know, we felt like that was a catharsis that made a difference, maybe not in the record, but made a difference in the relationship. So I guess I'm not of the mind that this is a signal of the end of Greg Gard. Because I think most people will look at that as a coach deciding to use the media to wage a little personal war.
Well, I mean, the fact that it got there and they had this conversation, I think the content of that conversation is pretty rough. And they had this hugely veteran team that they took a step back last year. And this year, the only guy coming back is Davison. And, you know,
of course.
And we thought that the whole team was going to come back because that's Wisconsin basketball. Whatever is maximally annoying, they will do to you. And instead, if you look at this roster, it's really hard to see them competing. And so coming off that season, you're going to, you know, your number two guy is Jonathan Davis, Tyler Wall. Like, they got to replace both centers. They got to replace, you know, Trice, who's been there as long as Craig's been alive. You know,
like, they are annoying.
That does not look like a tournament team to me. And so I feel like that combined with that sort of public outing is going to make it hard for them to retain him this year if that does actually come to pass.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think that they're really going to fall off. I mean, last year, of course, they had the problem with the two centers couldn't, you know, they thought they could play Potter together with the other big guy. I'm blocking on his name.
Reavers.
Yeah, Reavers. But they couldn't play together.
Coincidentally, he was one of the biggest critics of Greg Gard. He blamed Greg Gard largely in that meeting for the collective failures of the team and his personal issues on the court. He blamed those on Greg Gard.
Yeah, well, for whatever reason, he and Potter couldn't be on the court at the same time, and I blame Trice's mom. I think Trice's mom, you know, talk about annoying.
Oh my god!
I mean the
for years I wanted Michigan to put in the fine print on the ticket, no ululating, kick her out. For 10 years. We had to deal with that for 10 years.
That's true. We did have to deal with it for 10 years because you had it at Michigan State, and then I began hearing it at Wisconsin too. So they really are annoying. Iowa, you know, I guess Wieskamp is staying in the draft. Is that right? And
that's he's right. A one,
and they lost Frederick. Is
yes.
that correct?
Frederick transferred to Kentucky in a way that was not at all tampering.
Yeah, right. So they lose Frederick and Wieskamp. That's just too much because those are two very fine basketball players. And, you know, they got a bunch of guys that have the same name as the coach now, right? Like, and they'll be playing a bunch of guys named McCaffrey, right. And that's it.
Well, and Keegan Murray was one of the breakout
Keegan
freshmen.
Murray is good, yeah. Yeah,
and they get Bohannon back so he can sell more fireworks. But
that guy was actually not too bad.
Yeah, he's.
Oh yeah, they lost him too. Yeah. Lungy was a good player. Yeah.
Well, and he was also like the heir apparent at center, and now it's like, what are we doing there? And I don't really know what their answer is. And so you look at the league, and the only teams that really seem like they're going to be on the come up are probably Indiana. Has done work after hiring Mike Woodson, and you know, maybe Maryland, maybe Michigan State. I mean, Michigan State brings in a couple of players who I think are real good. Like, I think they're
Max,
point guard.
Max Christie. Yeah.
Well, and I think Aikens is really good, but historically freshman point guards under Tom Izzo don't really do a whole lot.
This is going to sound like I'm not ragging on the kid at all. I think Max Christie is a talent, but I've watched that kid a ton, and he just never looked like a five-star to me. Never have I seen him play like a
five-star. Yeah, I haven't seen him play. Is he the son of the Christie who used to be in the NBA?
Oh, Doug Christie, I don't think so.
Doug Christie, no, okay.
I don't think so, but he's a, you think five-star and you think take over the game offensively type of player. And dude, I've seen him 5-6 times and I've never seen him do that. That doesn't mean that he can't become an elite player. I just don't see him being elite his freshman year. He, you know, he might develop into a 5-star contributor, but I don't see him having, I don't see him being that type of guy as a true freshman. That's, I guess, what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So they're relying on Tyson Walker a lot, who's like a transfer, I think, from the Colonial, who,
Northeastern, I think, yeah.
Yeah, who did not go to the NBA G League camp and perform very well against a bunch of guys who are near NBA players like Devontae Jones did. So maybe he'll come through and he'll change their situation at point guard and then they'll be able to hack it. But, like, what are they going to do with center? Like, yeah, Bingham, are you actually going to put it on Bingham? Because they played their best basketball last year when Bingham was on the court. And then Izzo just refused to put him on the court enough. And their other options were terrible. hideously bad. And Bingham was getting like 15 minutes a game. And he'd get out there and he'd block some shots and he'd hit some shots. And you'd be like, okay, why is this guy stuck on the bench? And he's a beanpole, sure. But I there's something going on there that I don't quite understand.
Yeah, but it's Michigan State. There's always, I mean, it's Izzo. And you're right. I mean, it's like always a complete, sort of personality tire fire. Whether he's fighting with player X or player Y, he's going to be fighting with somebody for whatever reason. And so that team always, in my mind, or has been certainly a notably underachieving program. Right. Given the level of talent.
Yeah, sorry. Wisconsin, we have to get some assistant coach to give us like the inside of the locker room. Like Izzo, we see that stuff like on the court every day. Like he's yelling at his guys on the way into the tunnel.
All right, so we need to get to a break. I want to switch topics on the other side. I want to get to your name, image, likeness, observations from the first full week. I got to get to Seth Fisher's story about the shoelace shirt he's wearing, but I also want you guys to, do a little exercise for me. And I want you to project Justice Finkley, right? I want you to scout Justice Finkley. Why? Because we got a question in the chat log here via YouTube. And it's very simple. And I'll address it on the other side. And it'll make that question more relevant. But I'm trying to pull it up now as here it is from Justin Shust. And he says, so what's up with Justice Finkley? Did Michigan screw up? All right. So we will address that topic on the side as well. And I'll get your scouting report about how he projects. All right. And then we'll get into some name, image, likeness as well here on the Michigan Insider, MGo Blog Roundtable, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the tick. So I want to set up this Justice Finkley discussion in a much more succinct way than I just did going over it in the break. Basically, Justice Finkley came in on his official visit, really good official visit. Harbaugh really especially impressed them with the personal attention that he showed. But ultimately, I think they came away from the visit feeling like the defense didn't see Justice as a fit, as much of a fit as they originally did based on his measured height. And so they didn't see him as an edge guy anymore. If he came to Michigan, they were probably maybe playing more on the inside. And that's the long and the short of how things changed so quickly. Because people ask, why did you put in a crystal ball? Because the family said, put in a crystal ball for Justice is going down. So that's the genesis, the etymology, if you will, of what happened leading up to the Justice Finkley crystal ball. And then it turned so abruptly. They were coming on. The family was coming on the podcast last Saturday. We got a call Saturday morning saying, hey, no, we can't come on today. So by Sunday, they had dropped Michigan, and it was because of this. So that's why I ask you, Seth, you, Brian, I don't know if you've watched Justice Finkley, Craig, but if you could, based on your observations of his film, of him as a talent, where would you project or how would you project Justice Finkley in this defense?
He's Carlo Kemp. I mean, and I don't see why you don't, especially a team that just had Carlo Kemp for 5 years, would not want another Carlo Kemp. And like, is that guy an edge guy? No, but like when they called on him to be an anchor last year, he was great at it. I think he was a better anchor than he was. They had plenty of guys for that. They had Hutchinson, they had Pay. So they didn't really need him to do that. They needed him to play inside. This new defense, the Ravens defense doesn't have guys like that. They're not lying about that. If he can't play outside, then he really is too small to play the tackle positions, because these tackles are going to be defensive tackles. Those are 300 pounders in the Ravens defense. So I mean, if that's what you're doing, I understand it. But like, come on, this is recruiting, right? Can you like tell him, maybe like during the de-recruiting period after he's on campus that like, hey man. If you're not getting to the quarterback, we're moving you inside. Like, you could do it then, like every other team in the world does. And like, I get being honest with these guys, but Why would you not want Carlo Kemp again?
So Brian, let me be devil's advocate. I made my position clear. I think he's a team take, but let me give the other side and say, look, the last staff routinely recruited guys that didn't fit the scheme. Routinely. Like they're this press man team, you don't have press man corners. Right? You want these athletic edge bending guys, but and these big defensive tackles, but you get all these 220, 230 pound guys and you tried to build them up to that. And maybe that works with Quiddy Pay, but can you do that is that a common enough occurrence where you can do it all the time? Right? So we aren't gonna do that. We aren't gonna recruit guys that don't fit the scheme. And we aren't gonna lie to players about it. And we don't think he fits as an edge guy. We think if he comes here, he'll have to play on the inside. Could he do that? Could he contribute there? I don't know. What would you say to that retort to what Seth just said?
Well, you know, this is a guy who thinks he's an edge guy, right? Everybody wants to be an edge guy. And if you don't think he's an edge guy, you can take him and you can hope that inevitably when you slide him inside in a year or two that he, one, wants to stick around, and two, can actually build himself up to the point where he's a viable inside player. And that is a tough needle to thread. And so if that is actually what you think, the most likely outcome is that you spend a couple years developing this guy and then he gets pissed off and he leaves. And so maybe you don't want to do that for program continuity purposes, for just the fact that, like, this is a new era of college football, right? There's no penalties for transferring. So if you don't think that you have a role for this guy who thinks that he's an edge, then I think that the most reasonable thing to do is not recruit him as an edge and see if he's going to transfer away from you before you spend a bunch of time on him.
See, but you know, they didn't. This is one of the things about not having those. This is a COVID consequence. You don't have the in-person evals. So they didn't know he was 6'5" until he came on a visit.
How tall is Brandon Graham?
This dude is not Brandon Graham.
But how tall is Brandon Graham?
Brandon, I think he's 6'1", but he's not Brandon. I want to make it clear. He's not Brandon. BG is maybe one of the most explosive players to ever play on the defensive line at Michigan. And I get the reference. We actually used references like Brandon Graham and Dwight Freeney and Elvis Dumervil to say there are examples of guys that play bigger than their listed sizes. But I want to be clear that I am not suggesting in the slightest that he is that caliber of athlete. He is a very productive guy at the highest level of football in Alabama, which encourages me. It gives me the belief that he can at least be a contributor. So, Seth, can you – let's say he gets up to 275. He can't be a rotation player and you one gap him.
As a tackle?
They're going to have a strong side end in this defense. You know, they like to go three tackle and they like to have those guys be able to come inside and stuff like that. But against most teams, you can get away with a smaller guy. And you're going to need to have that in your tool belt. I don't think Michigan's not going to have anchors anymore.
Or the times when they go even front, they said they're going to be multiple. The times when they go even front.
Well, it's multiple.
Yeah, I mean, that's so you go even front and this guy fits maybe in an even front, but you can't be multiple with him if he's 275 and you want to be a three down lineman defense primarily. Like, that's just not going to fly unless he's a super freak, and it sounds like he is not.
I think they're going to regret this one, in my opinion. I haven't seen whole game tape, but just looking at the highlight tape, I would say this guy's extremely quick. He is strong, even though he's not huge. And what I like about him, the guy just doesn't give up on plays. I mean, he's got heart. And so he may not be Brandon Graham, but he's a strong, quick guy with heart. I think it was Sam who said, quote, I wrote this down about him in my notes, that I would be surprised if he's not an NFL player. That's what Sam Webb said at one point.
I did think he was 6'3", 250 at the time. So,
but see, I don't see this 1 or 2 inches. If he's 6'2" versus 6.5", I mean, does this really make much difference? I don't know.
The inches matter on the edge. Like the way that they play, they do. Here's a question, though. When's the last time Michigan stayed in the same defense for 4 or 5 years?
Well, never. these coaches can't recruit on the idea that they're getting fired.
No.
No matter how likely that is.
No, but I mean, you also have to keep in mind that, like, when you're building, and Harbaugh has got to keep in mind when he's putting his program together that, like, you know, I don't say go around and just take anybody, right? And, like, for the most part, when you're making these calls, you got to make these calls. Finkley seems like a guy that you just say, look, you know, whatever, we want this guy. We want you to come here no matter what. You may not end up inside, but, like, you make that clear. And if they're telling him that and not making it absolutely clear that, like, look, we're going to give you all the chances you can outside. It's just it might not work, and that then we might move you inside. I don't think this is happening. I think they made it clear to him that they didn't, that, you know, they don't get that out of nowhere. I think they were being honest, and they lost him because of it. And
so here,
okay, fine.
Here's the thing. So I want to make this clear, not to give people hope, but to just to highlight how Michigan focused he was. I mean, the dad and the uncle say it, even though Justice didn't put Michigan in his final three, it's not over for Michigan if they want to get back in. Now, what does get back in mean? Like I even said to his uncle, who is a diehard Michigan fan, might be listening right now. And man, I kind of think that's your heart speaking. I don't know that it's in the cards for Michigan to sort of change its approach unless Jim comes in and says what you just said, Seth, that, look, we'll figure it out, that this guy is a team take because he checks so many other boxes. We know he has the work ethic. To Craig's point, we know that he's a nonstop motor guy. We know he's going to be a leader. He is excellent in the classroom, wants to be a neurosurgeon. And he has these, you know, all of these guys that he's connected to. He isn't necessarily connected to Walter Nolan per se more than his profile, because his profile is what got Walter Nolan's, you know, got his attention. Like, man, they lost Finkley, so they got to address that with Finkley, right? But I mean, with Nolan, yeah. But I imagine they have to address that with a lot of guys who are looking at that profile. But they were planning on coming up to the barbecue with a carload of Bama guys, a carload of Bama prospects. That's obviously not happening now. So the point being that he also can help influence other players. That's why I say this is one of those guys where you're like, is this a team take? I mean, even after all that, they're still saying Michigan is alive. It makes you say that maybe this is one guy that you make an exception for, even if it fudges the numbers a bit, because they got Eugenio, they got Kevontae Henry, they feel like they're looking good for Josh Josephs now. You know, you're still in there with Michael Pollard, you're still in there with some other guys. I know you can't take 12 edges, right? So I get it, but then at the same time, you wonder if this is just one of those team takes that you figure it out with. So great discussion, but I want to pause there because I got to get Seth talking about NIL, man.
Oh, sure. The shoelace shirt
and then some of our observations for week one. So tell us the story of the shoelace shirt first.
Oh, Brian probably knows the story better than I. I was, you know, just basically a dude writing on his board when this all went down. But we had a shoelace shirt that we were selling on the blog. You know, we had a bunch of different shirts back then that were player focused because no one cared. And I think this lasted maybe all of 2009 before the.
So it doesn't say shoelace number 16. It doesn't say Michigan.
No, it's just the exact
shoelace is flapping in the wind.
And if we had the ability to license these shirts with the actual players, we would have. But we stopped. We discontinued that after a little bit because it was clear, like, it just didn't feel good. So,
but in the grand scheme of things, this was like fair use, right? Wasn't this fair? Is this not an example of fair use?
No, because it's not about copyright that you're repurposing, but it's, I think it would be a gray area. But it doesn't have to be a gray area anymore because you can just say, hey, we've got this shirt we want to sell.
Yeah.
Dude, would you like a cut of the proceeds?
The point of the story was we stopped selling it, or, you know, we stopped selling it because of a lot of the reasons. And then right after that, I think Adidas was selling their own copy of it. And it wasn't just us. A lot of other people had this shirt too. Like, you know, we weren't the only shoelace shirt that popped out after that Western Michigan game. And then, like, all the ones on the streets, right, all those guys, too, like, they had to take their shoelace shirts down, and all of a sudden Adidas was making theirs. So,
wow.
That was an old story. Michigan's not the only school that had that happen. And, you know, people want these things. And, like, that's one of the points about NIL is that there was a lot of money out there that the players never had access to, and that people around the program never had access to because they had, like, these rules for amateurism that were just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So
you used to guys see the deal down in Miami where the guy said, the gym guy said, hey, everyone on the squad gets $6,000.
Yeah. He gave 540,000 to the team, and apparently it's going to be doled out, you know, $6,000 each. Now what the team is going to do for him. Does the team have to do anything for him? I don't know.
So, Sam, the follow-up that, guys, did you see
$500 a month for the team to do sponsorships
for the gym? But right. They also created an organization called
$500 a month is not a bad sponsorship price. I mean, that's fairly reasonable as far as the market value.
Bringing back Seth, they're creating an organization called Bring Back the U. And they basically want people to funnel money to this, and they can just give the money to all the kids. They're creating, and more schools are going to do this, where they just create an organization, donate money to this, and then we're going to give it to the kids.
And so this was kind of what you were talking about, Craig, last week, right? Where you said, what can't you do with an open policy like this?
Well, let me just throw something out, and this may carry over to next week. I read, there's this kid at Skyline High, you probably know about, Hobbs Kessler.
He's a pro now, right?
Right. Yes. He's a pro, but he's going to go to Northern Arizona University, which may seem strange to many people, except that's a great distance running school because they're at elevation. And it's a bigger school than I thought. It's 27,000 undergrads, 31,000 total students, cheap tuition, $10,000 a year, and 61% female student body. And I knew nothing about the place until I saw that this kid is going there. But he's quote, turned pro because I think Adidas is sponsoring him or something like that. I thought Michigan needs a center, basketball center at some point in time here because we think Hunter's here one more year. What about Mitch McGarry?
What?
I mean, could Mitch McGarry come back and play at Michigan?
I don't know if he's really in shape anymore.
Well, I'm not saying, let's say theoretically Mitch got into shape.
Okay. Isn't he like,
you have an 30? Eligibility counter that starts after high school. So his eligibility is long gone. So is mine, by the way.
Hey, all right. If you guys are depressed or anything, I just want you to know that Jabril Peppers tweeted out, why do I settle for women that force me to pick up the pieces? So he's a millionaire. He has 2% body fat, and he's still struggling. So you are not alone, everybody out there. And then Charles Woodson replied to him, young fella, you grown, cut that ish out. So take.
I actually had this conversation with Jabril. Surprise.
He was talking to you about lady problems?
I did have a discussion with Jabril about lady problems back in the day.
Back in the day.
We are still live, Sam.
Well, you made it, Sam. You figured this out already, young fella. I thought you figured this out already. It only gets more complicated when you start making a bunch of money.
If you're on the dating sites and you're not getting hits and you're not getting matches or swiping or whatever, just know that you can be an NFL player who can run faster than God and still there's problems out there. So you just keep going.
You know what? Hey, take a page out of LeBron's book and just go with the ladies who knew you before you were who you are now. Go with the ones from high school, man. If you had like a high school sweetheart, go back and find her and you might be all right. That's what I said. That's what LeBron did. What?
Seth, you wanted to say something? No.
All right.
The lady conversation shut it down. That's what happened.
And Seth is out.
Seth's out. He's done.
And where did this come from, Brian? What was
Twitter, which you should be on.
No, I'm not. I don't go there. I don't go there. It's toxic.
Hey, well, that's where you find out all this NIL stuff, man. It's crazy. Yeah. It's a new day, and it'll be interesting to see. This is of all the NIL developments that we've seen thus far, this Miami one and the nuance that Ira pointed out about creating the fund that everyone just donates to and they give it to players. Because your point, Craig, was who's to say that the players have to do anything? If this goes down, then to your point, this is an example of they don't have to do anything.
Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, is the NC, let's say that at Miami, they do nothing. They get their $6,000 and they do nothing. NCAA going to come in and do anything?
No.
No. Is Will Wade still a coach at LSU?
We're gonna ask.
I think he is.
Do this like every day, like Carthage, and furthermore, Will Wade is still LSU.
Franco is still dead.
All right,
that's gonna do it for us this week. Obviously, we always find things to talk about. I keep telling these fellas, my guys, as long as you want to come back, we'll keep doing it. So I'm hoping.
We got hockey next week. We got a ton of interesting hockey to talk about.
There you go. All right, folks. We got to get out of here, though. That's another MGO Blog Roundtable in the book, another Michigan Insider in the book. We will be back tomorrow here, the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK of the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus Station.